Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Good afternoon, everyone. Okay, today we will continue with the study of Sutta Nipata, and today we will take the sutta called the Sala Sutta. This is the sutta which is titled The Dart. I originally said that we would take the Sabbaya Sutta, but then after reading it again, I saw that in order to explain it, one has to know Pali and Indian languages, and it's more suitable for a class than for a discourse. Okay, the theme of the Sala Sutta is not a very cheerful subject, but a necessary one, is death. And the verses of the sutta constitute a kind of meditation on death. One could almost take the verses and use them as a systematic, discursive meditation on death. And death forms the starting point for the Buddha's teaching. In fact, we could even say that, looking at it more broadly, that death is the starting point for almost all the higher religions in the world. Since just about all of the higher religions begin when human beings reflect upon their own mortality, the finitude which is bound up with their own existence, the fact that our life comes to an end. And religion has the purpose of showing human beings a way to overcome their finitude, the limitations of mortality. Some human beings do this by promising humans the possibility of eternal life, a way to achieve the eternal extension of their own individual existence. The Buddha does not promise the possibility of an eternal individual existence, but Buddhism too aims to point out the way to what we might call a deathless state of being, the state that is called Nibbana or Nirvana. When the Buddha was still living in the palace, the problem that upset him, that distressed him, was the discovery, the realization that life eventually culminates in old age, sickness. If there was just old age and sickness, perhaps that would not have been enough to impel him to leave the palace searching for a solution to the problem of existence. But it was not simply the fact that life is subject to old age and sickness, but it is the fact that besides old age and sickness, there is death. And what completely shook and shattered the complacency of the young prince Siddhartha was the realization that life ends in death, and that even for somebody who is young, strong, healthy, and vigorous like himself, the eventual destiny was to grow old and to die. And he realized that death was the fate of all living beings. His father, his wife, everyone in the palace and his kingdom. And so, when he left the palace, he went forth in order to find a path, a way to the state that is called Amata Dhatu, the deathless state. The state which is beyond jati marana, the state beyond birth and death. And during the course of his teaching career, the Buddha often taught meditation on death as one of the main themes of meditation. He emphasized that this contemplation of death is of great fruit and great benefits. He says that the meditation on death is of great fruit and great benefit, and that it leads to gaining a foothold in the deathless, that it culminates in the deathless. And so even though it might seem that meditation on death confronts us with something that is unpleasant and disagreeable, with the fact of our own mortality, but when we take this meditation and pursue it to its ultimate conclusion, it eventually leads us beyond death, beyond mortality, to that state which is free from death, free from mortality, to the deathless state. But even before we reach that level, the meditation on death is still of great fruits and benefit, even for helping us deal with little problems that we meet with in our own day-to-day lives. First of all, the meditation on death helps us come to terms with our own mortality. When we consider, if we don't consider the fact that we are going to die, then as we grow older, then we become filled with anxiety and worry. Oh, I'm getting old. Oh, death is coming close. And it becomes so distressful and frightening, the thought that our life is coming to an end. But if we regularly give time, devote time to reflect on the fact that death is our inevitable destiny. Even if we do this just for a few minutes every day, then this helps to prepare us for our eventual aging and confrontation with death. So that as we grow older, as we go closer to the time of death, we're able to accept the fact that we have to die gracefully, with equanimity. Then it's also an inescapable fact of life that it's uncertain that death will take place at some distant time in the future. It can happen that death will come knocking at our door any time, even very soon. It could be we go for a routine checkup with the doctor. The doctor tells us, I'm sorry to inform you, but you have an advanced case of cancer. There's nothing we can do about it. How much time do I have, doctor? At best, you have 6 months. Wow, I never expected this. I'm only 50 years old. I'm not. But suppose you're only 50 years old. I was figuring on 30 more years, 35 more years of life. Now just 6 more months. Oh, what am I going to do? So many plans for the future. So many hopes, so many dreams. Now, they're all crushed, all destroyed. Just 6 more months left. How am I going to fit all of them in for 6 months? But let alone 6 months, suddenly you're driving down the highway and some drunken driver is driving down the other side, coming down another road, crashes into your car, and not 6 months, 1 minute left. Car comes crashing into your car. The material of your car comes crashing into your body, and now your whole life is spinning out in front of you as the blood starts draining from your body. And you never counted on this happening. You were always figuring on 30 years, 40 years, and now your life is coming to an end. If you had never done the contemplation of death, this is coming just like a shock out of nowhere, completely, utterly unexpected. It's just like a trapdoor has opened up out of the bottom of the earth and swallowing you up into it. But if you have done the meditation on death, reflecting on the different possible causes of death, then you realize that death can take place from many causes unexpectedly, that death could come any time in any way. We say that maranang niyatang, death is certain. Marana kalo, the time of death. Aniyato, the time of death is uncertain, unfixed, unpredictable. So if you've done the reflection on death, the meditation on death, then if death comes suddenly, unpredictably, then you just can bring this past contemplation to the mind, and you recognize now it's coming, just as I have practiced it, just as I have rehearsed it in my mind, 100 times, 500 times, 1,000 times. This is what I have already prepared for. This is what, though I didn't know it would happen in this way, but I know that I could have expected it to come in this way. And so my mind is prepared. I'm ready to accept it. And so one is ready to give up the attachment to this life and go peacefully and gracefully on to one's next existence. But if death comes suddenly and one is unprepared, without any expectation, then there comes the panic attack. It's like the red alert button has been pressed. Terrorist attack. All the alert signals are going. The bell is the alarm signal. The siren is on full blast. And all of one's tentacles of attachment are grasping. Oh, my wife, my husband, my children. I don't even have time to get my cell phone out from my handbag and call them. No time to send out emails. At least let me just send out one email to one friend who can inform the others how I'm going. Who's going to let them know that I'm going in this way? But if one has prepared oneself one theme to add to the classical meditation on death, no way to inform the others. No opportunity for cell phone calls, no access to a computer. So this is one benefit, is that when one does the meditation on death, if death comes quickly and unpredictably, then one is prepared in advance. Then, by doing the meditation on death in one's own case, when death takes place, whether at a ripe old age or whether it takes place suddenly and unpredictably, one can give up the attachments to the things of this world. That is, the meditation on death, as one prepares oneself in one's own mind to face death, it helps to wear away the attachments to the objects of this world. Because as one meditates on death, one comes to realize that sabbang pahaya gantabang, having given up everything, one must go. That is, one must leave behind everything in this world as one passes on from this body to one's next existence. What does one have to give up in this world as one passes on to the next existence? One has to give up first all one's material possessions. Every material acquisition, whether it be material wealth, money, bank accounts, property, all of that has to be given up. Whether it be title, position, status, all of that has to be given up as one goes on. Then one has to give up all one's relationships. One has to give up husband, one has to give up wife, one has to give up children, friends, parents, if you're dying before them. So all of those relationships have to be abandoned at the time of death. And then even this body and all of one's mental acquisitions, one's learning, one's knowledge, one's sense of personal identity, all of that has to be given up at the time of death. The only thing that one takes along at the time of death is one's accumulation of karma, wholesome and unwholesome karma, and one's mental dispositions, one's tendencies, that goes along. And so if one does the contemplation of death and makes it a regular practice, that meditation is somewhat like chopping away at a tree with an axe, little by little. It's like chopping it away at a giant redwood tree with an axe. Little by little, that meditation, done regularly, done consistently, chops away a little bit of the wood, knocks away those attachments, so that when one has to go, then one can give up these attachments easily. And then when one does the meditation on death regularly, in the course of this life, it instills in the mind a mind that develops that urge for renunciation, the mind that turns away from the enjoyment of the transitory pleasures of this world, and instead seeks the joy, the delight, the peace, the higher peace, the higher delight that comes from renunciation. Okay, so these are some of the benefits that come through this Marana Sati, the meditation on death. Okay, so there are systematic ways of practicing the meditation on death, but this discourse in the Sutta Nipata, the Sala Sutta, throws out in an unsystematic way a variety of themes that can be used for reflection as a way to develop this meditation on death. And this meditation on death can also be used not only to help one come to terms with one's own death, but also to help one come to terms with the death of close relatives and friends. So when they pass away, instead of being overwhelmed by sorrow and grief, one can accept their death with some measure of equanimity. It doesn't mean that one has to be completely stoic and completely stone cold. One can experience some sorrow at losing a close and dear friend, but one doesn't remain with this tight clinging and this obsessive grief, but one naturally will experience the sorrow at losing a dear friend, but then one will be able to overcome that sorrow and let the sorrow pass away and be able to return to one's life with renewed courage and renewed strength. So let us now turn to the sutta on the dart. Some of the verses I like to take in the original language, in the Pali. Animitang ananyatang machanang ita jivitang kasirancha paritancha tancha dukena sanyutang. Okay, it starts with the very general universal statement that life in this world, it uses the expression, it has no sign and that it is unknown here in this world. It's translated that life is unpredictable and uncertain in this world. The meaning, the intended meaning, is that we have no definite knowledge how long we are going to live. We have no knowledge when, in advance, when our life is going to come to an end. Because the life of mortals, life here in this world, is difficult and limited, and it is bound up with suffering. So we come into this world and we have what we take to be a general human lifespan. We take the typical human lifespan to be something like 75, 80 years old. But can any of us say, okay, the general human lifespan is 75, 80 years old, therefore I'm going to live to be 75, 80 years old? Can anybody say that? Shifu certainly can say that. More than say that, he's lived to be 88 years old, so he's gone over the over the mark. But But I can't say, I'm 62 years old, I'm going to my room. I can't say, I'm going to be 80 years old, I might go out for a walk this afternoon, slip on some ice, crack my head on the pavement, and then tomorrow, Sunday, telephone calls go out, we have to tell you, very sad, but Venerable Bodhi slipped on the pavement, cracked his head, and the funeral will be held such and such a place. It's like that. That's the reality. I had a good friend in Sri Lanka back in the 1980s. He was an American monk. He was about 1 year, 2 years older than myself. He had left Sri Lanka to go back to America to visit his father for his father's 80th birthday. His father was living in Los Angeles. He was planning to go from Sri Lanka. I heard he wanted to go to Thailand, to stop in Thailand on the way back. Then from Thailand to go on to Los Angeles. A few days later, I came to the Buddhist Publication Society in Kandy, and when I came there, the general secretary told me, I have some very sad news to tell you. I said, what's that? He said, I got a call from the American Embassy, Venerable Bodhisattva, that was this American monk's name, died in Nepal, Kathmandu. In Nepal. What happened, you see, he liked Kathmandu, so he decided on this trip, he would go from Colombo to Kathmandu, then from Kathmandu to Bangkok. In Kathmandu, he got a hernia of his large intestine, and he was brought to a Nepalese clinic for surgery. They did some surgery, gangrene set in, and the gangrene just deteriorated, and he died. So here's a case. I can't say he was a young man. This was 1988. So he would have been about 46 years old. But I had seen him about a week earlier. You know, he just 2 weeks earlier, he left. He said, okay, I'll see you when you get back from Los Angeles. And he never got back. So unpredictable is life. This is the way. And there was no sign, this is what's meant by saying animittang, when we parted and he said, see you when you get back, there was no sign hanging over his head saying, he's never going to get back. No warning was flashed. He didn't know it. I didn't know it. Nobody else knew it. But this is the way. See, this is the way that dice fall on the table when one casts the die. Have you ever had any incidents like this in your own life? Like this? Who has had incidents like this? Similar incidents? If you have, raise your hands. Who has never had an incident like this where you've parted from somebody saying, see you later, and then you've never seen that person before? Never seen that person again? So nobody has had anything. Everybody has had an incident like that. You say, see you later, and then you never see the person again because that person has died unexpectedly. Of course, this is much less common now in the developed world because now we found so many medical ways to combat the illnesses, the epidemics, the diseases, which were much more rampant in ancient times. But in ancient India, or at any time in the ancient world, there would have been many more epidemics, diseases, which would have eliminated large segments of a population without any way to remedy these problems. And so life expectancy would have been much shorter in the time in ancient times, and there would have been many more incidents of death in childhood and infancy. And so for that reason, it's said that life is short, and life has always been bound up with suffering. That is true under all conditions. Okay, then we go to the next verse. Nahi so puk, nahi so pukamoati. Yena jata namire jaram pipatva maranang evangamahi panino. Then the translation reads, a being once born is going to die, and there is no way out of this. When old age arrives, or some other cause, then there is death. This is the way it is with living beings. You know, we think that, well, we commonly assume that we've been born, and then we think that death takes place because of some cause that just somehow inconveniently and impolitely, inconsiderately throws itself in our way obstructively and brings about our death without taking due consideration of our own superior wishes. And so we say that when we write the death certificate, death takes place from this cause or that cause. Heart attack, death from stroke, death from cancer, death from automobile accident, and so on. But what is the real cause of death? The fundamental cause of death. Death actually comes along the moment of birth. You could say that the underlying cause of death is having been born. Or we could say that death is co-arisen with the event of birth. And so in the theme, in the meditation on death, the way it's taught systematically, one way to do the meditation on death is to think that from the moment that I'm born, death is constantly present throughout my life, that it's continually following me, that it's right behind my back, always trailing me. It's somewhat like an assassin who's been hired to assassinate me. And it's always following me, always on the lookout. It's just waiting for the right opportunity. And it is these conditions, just the external conditions, that are providing the right opportunity for death to strike. So when some cause comes around that for death to take place, that is just an external cause that is providing the opportunity for the assassin to strike. But the assassin is always present. It's just behind my back, waiting for that opportunity. If I'm a little bit careless, death is going to come and strike. And so if one thinks in this way, then one becomes accustomed always to think of death not as some enemy who's out to destroy me, but one can think of death just as a friend that one can welcome if one is sitting alone in a room having a cup of tea. One could even pour two cups of tea. Realizing that one of the cups will not be drunk, thinking that the other friend will just, is a little too shy to show his face, and so he won't drink it. That he's still present in the room, but he's a little bit too shy to come out in the open and drink it. Okay, the next two verses give us some other images to think of in doing the meditation on death. Okay, when fruits become ripe, they may fall in the early morning. In just the same way, a being once born may die at any moment. Okay, so when fruits are ripe on the tree, then they can fall at any time. One doesn't know when they're going to fall. They could fall morning, afternoon, or night. But because the fruits are ripe, one knows that just a little shaking of the tree and the fruits are going to fall. The cause for their falling is the ripeness of the fruit. And so we know that once we've taken birth, death is going to take place. And death can take place at any period in our life. Can take place in our infancy, childhood, young adulthood, middle age, old age. We don't know when it will take place, but we know the death has to take place. And then the next verse, it's like the clay pots made by a potter. They all tend to end up being shattered, and so it is with the life of mortals. Of course, now when we make very nice, beautiful clay pots, fine ceramics, then we want to preserve them. But in ancient India, they didn't make very fine and beautiful ceramic goods, but the potters in the ordinary village would just turn out quite ordinary clay utensils, which would be used very casually, and people didn't think twice about dropping a clay pot or plate against the ground, and the clay pot or plate would break and shatter and come to an end. In fact, years ago in India, when we used to travel by train in India, when you order tea, the train pulls into the station in India, if you order tea, there were these vendors who were selling the tea at the stations, usually they're young boys, and they sell the tea, and they pour the tea into these little nice clay cups. Not especially beautiful, but they're just ordinary clay cups. And then you drink the tea, they give you the clay cup with the tea in it, you drink the tea as the train is pulling out, then you wonder, what do I do with the clay cup? And you think, well, maybe I should keep it. But the Indian people don't keep the clay cups, they just drink the tea, then they throw the clay cup out the window and it shatters and becomes, well, it's always been clay, it just shatters and becomes earth again. To turn back once the heavy rains come, it will dissolve the clay and it becomes part of the earth again. This is what was done years ago, but when I last traveled in India, was it already in the 1980s, those nice little clay cups were replaced by plastic cups, which are still being thrown out the window, but they don't dissolve. Instead, they just accumulate alongside the tracks, and so you get mountains of plastic cups alongside the tracks. Okay, so we continue. A lot of the verses already cover themes I've already touched on. Both the young and old, whether foolish or wise, are trapped by death. All beings move towards death. They are overcome by death. They go to the other world. And not even a father can save his son or a family their relatives. Look, while relatives are watching, tearful and groaning, men are carried off one by one, like cattle being led to the slaughter. And this gives us an interesting theme for reflection. When you see how human beings fight among each other, this, and then one reflects on death, this gives one an important key to see how futile and useless are all the quarrels, all the fighting, all the warfare among human beings. We're like cattle on a cattle truck being led to slaughter. In fact, I actually saw this last year when I was in Taiwan. I was being driven back from some trip to Kaohsiung, to see this, chiropractor in Kaohsiung. And along the road, I heard this oink, 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 oink. And I looked up and I saw that there was this big truck of pigs next to the car I was in. And the pigs, they were struggling and fighting against with one another. And then I asked the women who were driving the car, where are those pigs going? And they said, they're being brought to the slaughterhouse. But the pigs are fighting and struggling for supremacy on the truck. Which is going to be the chief pig? Who's going to get the best spot? Which pig is going to get the best share of the food? But they're all going to slaughterhouse. Within a couple of hours, they're going to be brought to the slaughterhouse, and they're all going to be, sad to say, they're all going to have their heads cut off and be dead. But they don't see this, they don't realize this, and so they're fighting with each other. And we human beings are in the same position. if we all could really deeply see that we are all moving towards death and destruction, not from each other, but just inevitably by the nature of life, then we would have sympathy and compassion for each other. But instead, we're fighting who has this property, who has this land, who has the most wealth, who has these resources. And so we just inflict so much more misery and suffering on one another. Okay, and so verse 8 says, I like the Pali words better. Evaṃ abhāhato lokō macchūnā ca caraya ca tasmā dhīrā na sochanti vidīva lokā pariyāyaṃ. It says, thus the world is struck or stricken by death and aging. To say death and aging are endemic to the world, it's so much weaker than the original word. Abhāhato, struck, pierced by aging, by death and aging. And thus the wise who have understood pariyāyaṃ is like the turning of the way the world turns about. It's a much nicer word simply than the nature of the world, but this is the way things turn around in the world. They do not grieve. They do not sorrow. Okay, maybe I will end here. Okay, I thank you all for your attention, and may the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Okay, let us share the merits of listening to the Dhamma and teaching the Dhamma. Let us share the merits with the Devas, the Buddhas, and the Nagas, and with other beings, wishing them all to partake of these merits and to protect the good Dhamma, to protect the world from sorrow and misery, and to protect ourselves and others. Akasata chabhumata adeva naga mahitika punyantang anumoditva Chirang rakantu sasanam. Akasata chabhumata adeva naga mahitika punyantang anumoditva Chirang rakantu desanam. Akasata chabhumata adeva naga mahitika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakantu mam param. Etavata ca amhehi sampadang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. Etavata ca amhehi sampadang punya sampadang sabbe buddha anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. Etavata ca amhehi sampadang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya.